Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey friends, it's Ken Carmen.
And Anthony Lima.
Did you know that the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima is both a radio show and a podcast?
You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by the hour, or jump straight to the highlights.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search our names, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
Your way and on your time.
But I would say the thing that pretty much every, and I mean every, single Guardians fan cares about, that Carl Willis will take some time to mull his future.
Yeah. Offer him the bag. Offer him whatever you need to offer him. You can't let him go.
Okay, what if he's like, well, can you like give me more talent to work with?
Yeah, that might be the non-negotiable. Like part
he
of his skill
set, $20 million on a hitter to so my pitchers have a chance.
So part of his skill set is like we always say, like, oh, Stefanski, quarterback whisperer, and that's been debunked. But like we do give credit to other people, like Shanahan, for instance, Jimmy Garoppolo to the Super Bowl, Brock Purdy to the Super Bowl. He's made McCorkle Jones, your guy, into a legit player at least for 1 week. Carl Willis' superpower is he takes just about any pitcher and turns him into something.
Yeah, or something better than what he was.
He gets the most out of these guys.
He and Brad Goldberg made Matt Festa serviceable. And you have to understand, Matt Festa was a scrub. He was Eniel De Los Santos before Eniel De Los Santos came to Cleveland and was good. Where has Eniel De Los Santos been since Cleveland? No bueno.
I mean, we had a season where Ortiz ended up going away, and all of a sudden, we're like, well, geez, we're just screwed. And then it turned into pitcher after pitcher that we were able to get something out of. Slade Ciccone, Parker Messick, all these guys. Carl, you might be part of the secret sauce.
So we've got some calls on the Dylan Gabriel stuff. But the question we threw out for old DG there is what's the plan or what's the goal with Dylan Gabriel?
I'm going to let the record show, by the way. I didn't want to acknowledge the no bueno thing.
The no bueno?
Yeah.
But I threw a little...
You had some zest to it.
I did. I'm very zesty, as the kids would say.
Is that what they say? No bueno.
I thought it was muy bien.
E tu?
Yeah. I took 2 years. Two years of Spanish in high school. How many did you take?
Three.
Three.
Yeah.
It's the funniest thing.
Spanish one.
I feel like for some reason, everyone always wants to, none of us remember any of it.
Yeah.
Like, we remember
some
of it. Like seven words, maybe.
Yeah. De donde está la biblioteca?
That's only because of Parks and, that wasn't Parks and Rec. That was Parks and Rec.
No.
Community. It was Community. Donde está la biblioteca? That wasn't because of school. That was because of a show.
I don't think that's correct. I don't remember that way. Now, Albert Breer, we asked him what's the goal.
You didn't think I was going to get that poll at all, did you?
You got there. You landed the plane.
All right.
What's the goal with Dylan Gabriel? Here was his answer.
I think he's going to play well, guys. I may have used this comp with you guys before. Do you guys look at him and think, like, he could be Chase Daniel for the next 15 years? That's my thing is, like, if he can at least get you to a point where Jerry Judy's got a chance to make plays, Harold Bannon's got a chance to make plays, you know, you can do some stuff with Quinshon Judkins and Dylan Sampson out of the backfield. If he gets you to a place where you can, you know, really kind of keep your young players growing, you know, keep guys locked in, that's valuable. So I think there'll come a point when they want to look at Shador, probably. Yeah, I think there probably is. But do I think it's going to come at, like, the cost of, like, Jerry Judy performing or Harold Bannon performing or David Njoku performing? Do I think it's going to come at that cost where it's going to be a detriment to everybody else being able to do their job for a 4 or a 5 or a 6-game stretch? Probably not.
In fairness, some of those guys aren't doing their job already. And then when it comes to Dylan, here's I don't love that Albert was like, well, what if he becomes Chase Daniel? As if that would be a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
I also just think, like, here's the real goal with Dylan. The franchise quarterback, system quarterback, all that nonsense, it's not all the nonsense. All that stuff is how we talk about it. It's not how they talk about it. I think the goal for the Browns with Dylan is see if we can win with Dylan. And what I mean by that is for the next 6, 7, 8 weeks, can we win games with him? Because if we're 1-7 with Dylan, 8 games from now, or 7 games from now, because they already lost one, if you're 1-7, there's no reason to not go to Shador, or there's no reason to not go to whatever door seed that there is. So it's not, can he be a franchise quarterback? You cannot ascertain that in one season. We found that with Baker. We had Baker here 4 years, and they couldn't ascertain whether he's a franchise quarterback or not. They got that wrong.
It takes time. Yeah.
So, like, this is about right now in this context, can we win games with Dylan Gabriel? Because if you can, then the more talent around him, you think to yourself, well, more talent, maybe better Dylan Gabriel, the Brock Purdy stuff, right? You had Brock with the best stuff. Now you don't have him with the best stuff, and you wonder what the hell you have in Brock Purdy.
Well, and so that's always been the inverse. That's always been one of the hard parts about this upcoming season that's now playing out, is the idea that we didn't know if Stefanski was going to have enough weapons or enough pieces to even fairly judge whether or not any of these quarterbacks can be something at a higher level. Because throw anybody out there. Your Josh Allen, your Patrick Mahomes, your Lamar Jackson, whoever you want, put them on this roster. How are they faring? I would imagine a lot of them would still do a really nice job. I'm sure Mahomes could still do a really nice job. But you see how it changes. The conversation changes. That's why the 49ers are important in this context.
Well, and I just think, like, John Greco today with the Morning Boys said, he wouldn't put money on Dylan Gabriel playing the rest of the season, right? Yeah, no one should, because that's not the goal yet.
Mm-hmm.
The only way, there are steps to this with Dylan. And as dismissive as I am about what I think he'll be in the NFL, the first thing is, can we stay competitive with you? And then can we win with you? And if the winning becomes a thing, then it becomes, okay, how far can we win? And that's how you get to the end of the rainbow and finish the season, having started 12 games this year. And that, to me, that's the crux of it, though. But starts with, can you win? Not, can he play adequate?
Sure, but the risk here, and listen, it's a risk worth taking. You have to take these type of risks, but the risk that you are approaching is the idea that if he loses a lot of games, and if it doesn't look particularly good, genie's out of the bottle then. Mm. Like, and that really stinks for Dylan Gabriel, because before your career even takes off, it could be tanked in the toilet. You want to be Chase Daniel for 10 years. Why the backup quarterbacks have success, or have some sense of success, is because they do what Jake Browning did 2 years ago when he stepped in and won 9 games. Not what Jake Browning did over the previous, 3 games this season. Like, you do have to look competent, and you do have to win some games in the meanwhile. And so there's a real chance that Dylan Gabriel tanks his entire NFL career before it even gets started over the next 4 or 5 weeks.
I've said, you got to find out if you can win with Dylan. If not, then it's not that you hit the eject button and he goes to the surface of the sun. It's just then it's time to go to Shador, whatever you think option C will be. What do you think the goal is with Dylan?
I think the goal with Dylan is you got to find somebody. If you play out the rest of the season, it's got to be their goal. It's not my goal for Dylan, but I think their goal has got to be, that's our quarterback until the end of the season. And then if he wins at a, I don't know, let's say 50% clip, then you go into 2026, you draft a new quarterback, and then you do have that backup quarterback where not only the fans believe that Dylan Gabriel can step in if needed and win a game, but you have the evidence attached to it that the coaching staff would have made the right call. But anything short of that, you're entering a dangerous territory, because it's really hard to go into 2026 with Dylan as your backup quarterback if he goes 1-6 or 1-5 and then you have to bench him. You can't go back to that at that point.
216-474-0092. What's the goal with Dylan Gabriel here in Cleveland? Our buddy Thomas and Shaker joins us now. Thomas, welcome back to the show, bud.
Hey, Nick. Hey, JP. Great talking to you guys. Hey, Nick, I have a lot of respect for you and everything. Hmm. At first I was kind of heated when I heard you on the radio. I felt like you weren't being fair to Dylan, but you kind of explained your point a little better, and I'm not as heated about it. But I do think that this whole week since Dylan Gabriel, and I haven't listened to everybody, but I think Dylan Gabriel really had a really good game, his first game, and I just really think that we should.
Why do you think it was really good? He didn't have many completions beyond the sticks. They scored 17 points, and he looked serviceable.
I thought he looked really good in the red zone. I thought he looked really good in the red zone. And
the Njoku throw, he damn near fell down on the fan and touchdown.
Man, come on, man! I think you're being nitpicky here. Come on, I thought he had two red zone completions for touchdowns. And also, you got to realize that was his first game as a rookie, with some jet lag, playing in London, a short practice week.
The sun was in his eyes.
That was not an ideal week. That was not ideal week for his first
PFF,
start.
Thomas, PFF graded out his week five performance as the 25th out of 28 quarterbacks this week.
Elite.
I didn't say he was elite. He just left me wonderful more. So when we go down here and beat the Steelers next week, are we going to be like, ooh, Dillon Gabriel, possibly career best backup quarterback in the NFL?
What if he beat the Vikings? They didn't. Like, when we have new information. Listen, you know me, Thomas. I'm not afraid to say I was wrong. I take glee in it, especially when it comes to quarterbacks in Cleveland. I'd love to be wrong on the right side of things, meaning I'd love it if Dillon Gabriel was Kirk Cousins. But Kirk Cousins is 4 inches, 5 inches taller. Kirk Cousins, a little bit better arm. Kirk Cousins, actually, I don't think he's as good at mobility. I don't think that's his ceiling. I think his ceiling is left-handed Colt McCoy. And until proven otherwise, I haven't seen any. Like, did you see anything that told you he's a starter on Sunday?
I like the way that he commanded the huddle. I like his calmness. I like the way he played in the red zone.
What about the huddle?
Just let me wonder for more.
What about the huddle? Which part of the huddle did he command?
He looked confident in there. He looked confident and confident in there. He looked like he knew what he was doing. He looked comfortable. He didn't look like somebody who was scared. A lot of these rookie quarterbacks in the game.
That's a very low bar, my friend.
How many rookie quarterbacks have we seen, especially for the Cleveland Browns, getting there and they look scared and they look like they were lost in the huddle?
Yeah, but the rookie quarterbacks for the Cleveland Browns is not the bar. The bar is, are you eventually, do you have starter talent?
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying. But my whole point was he played against a really good defense. I thought he looked really good when he got the ball close to the red zone. He threw touchdowns when he got near the red zone, which is something that a lot of quarterbacks struggle with in the NFL, and I appreciated that. That's what I'm saying. I just want to see more. I'm not proclaiming he's going to be the next whatever. He just left me wanting more. I just thought he had a good performance on Sunday.
Thomas, we appreciate you. I think it does come down to, I know it's a semantics battle. Thomas said really good. I thought adequate. And I do. I wonder how much better can he play than he did on Sunday. And I also wonder, okay, what is the under of that performance look like? But I don't think anything you saw on Sunday means we have to run to the telephones and be like, we got one.
Hey, I like that Thomas at least said that he was like thirsting for more. He left wanting more I didn't leave wanting more. I just left with this is our reality.
If it helps,
it's a little bit different.
If it helps,
but I like that.
I
like that mentality by Thomas.
I definitely don't think I wanted more, but I definitely thought, I'm not going to be mad if I get more of that.
If that was a plate of food, I don't think I'm going back for seconds.
Yeah. Okay. But at the same point,
you know, I like my seconds.
I wouldn't spit it up either.
No, I'm not throwing it in the trash and being like, how dare anyone even think I would eat this? It was fine. It was okay. I'm just not going to wax poetic about it either.
216-474-0092. When it comes to Dillon Gabriel, what's the goal with Dillon Gabriel? And it doesn't matter how old the news is, it still doesn't sound good for Cleveland. That's in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan. As you and I are not fluent in Spanish, despite 5 years of Spanish in high school
combined.
Yeah.
The best we got was Donde está la biblioteca.
I just want to know where the library is, okay, guys?
Yeah, uh-huh.
All right? No one's telling me where the library is. However,
Miss Carble was my Spanish teacher.
She was
the hottest teacher in the school.
All right. People listening might actually know my Spanish teachers.
That's the difference. I can just speak this way because I'm not from here.
And let me tell you.
No one, like Miss Carble's kids aren't listening or anything like this. We're good.
Here's my take. They were teachers. And I had teachers, and they taught the classes, and that happened. And I had the teachers. That's it. Now that being said, the Jose Ramirez video, which was actually from March, where basically he accused the GM, which could be Chernetti, of telling him that they, on his hometown discount deal that he signed with the Guardians before the 2022 season, that he was told that they were going to reinvest the money in that they saved with him into the organization. And I'm going to go ahead and say that Hosey believes they didn't do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because he kind of alluded to. Now, again, this was March. So they had just traded Andres Jimenez. Friends with. They had just moved Josh Naylor, and they replaced him with Carlos Santana and no one. Oh, Nolan Jones.
So he's a Coney.
I'm talking about from the lineup side of things.
Okay.
And I thought it was interesting that people talking about the video, this is from March. I don't know why we're talking about this. I actually think it does matter, because if he was frustrated in March, I don't know how Hosey isn't watching what's happening in the playoffs. And I don't know how Hosey doesn't look at the pitching staff on this team and think, if they had reinvested that money into a bat or two, we absolutely could win the World Series this year, and certainly could have won the World Series last year, or at least played in the World Series.
You know, this season didn't help the case. If he's trying to, if you're trying to make the argument that he'll be more satisfied after this season, it didn't help the case. I bet J-Ram feels crossed in this whole ordeal.
Yes. Well, I mean,
How could you not?
If he feels lied to, then I think that could be a real concern.
Well, it's like, you know, Brady for years used to take that discount in New England. He used to be one of the lowest paid quarterbacks every single season. And was he getting a kickback on the other side of it? You tell me. Time will tell. I think it's already kind of told itself on that anyway. Yeah. But like,
it's called the Steve Ballmer plan.
When he takes that discount the way that he does, and then if he looked at it and the Patriots were spending the amount of money that they did, the way that like Kraft has spent since Brady's been gone, by the way, which up until this last season had not been plentiful. He just did it this last offseason, where they spent like $300 million in contracts. You'd be pissed. You'd be mad. Like, so, when you take the discount, the idea is that you give out the money in other ways. Jalen Brunson in New York took a massive discount, and what happened? They made a lot of deals, they made a lot of trades, and they spent a lot of money.
They also had a lot of sponsors give him money off the books.
Another guy, but still, like when you take these deals, that is part of the idea. If you're going to play that game of even taking deals in secrecy in order to go ahead and help out the roster, the idea is to help out the roster.
I think the only thing I would say is, I don't know when the Guardians signed that deal, I don't know that they knew that Bally Sports was going to go away the way it did. Remember, that was I believe that was a late 2022 development. Because I looked this up earlier, if I'm not getting my timelines, what if they did? And I mean, I don't know too many small market teams. I'm not trying to shill for the Dolans here. That's not what this is.
Well, because your national deal is still worth $60 million, though, and the revenue sharing on that is...
Well, but if you lose $50 million in revenue and your ownership already doesn't spend... Like, I'm not thinking about from the Dolans. I'm thinking from the GM side of things, who might have had one financial picture before that, and then you lose that $50 million, and the ownership's telling you a completely different thing.
Yeah, but now we're in an area where you're under $100 million, and we have it recorded on record the different ways that the Guardians can make over $100 million.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey friends, it's Ken Carmen.
And Anthony Lima.
Did you know that the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima is both a radio show and a podcast?
You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by the hour, or jump straight to the highlights.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search our names, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
Your way and on your time.
$100 million if you just look at the different licensing deals, and if you look at the national contracts, and then if you look at ticket sales, and throw, we haven't got to like anything else, jersey sales or anything in between. Like one fun fact people don't know about the national baseball agreements that they have is that the Guardians make the same money as the Yankees. It doesn't matter how many times you're on national TV, you make the same money as every other team. That has been collectively bargained. That is in everyone's deal.
Yeah,
that is what it is.
The local money is where teams make
up
that
money.
You
make more on the national.
Not for the Dodgers, not for the Yankees.
Not for the Dodgers, but for the Guardians, which is the team we're talking about right now. And so, like, if the Guardians was $40 million or $50 million, yes, you can account for that, sure. But I don't think it's crazy for J-Ram to say, look at what Kansas City has, look at what even St. Louis has. Markets that are comparable to you, and they have three and four guys on their roster that are making $20-plus million a year.
I mean, I think, who are the $40 million, the $20 million players on Kansas City?
I've looked it up, seriously, a couple days ago. It was
Salvador Perez.
It was Bobby Witt Jr., obviously got the $300 million deal. Was the last one Seth Lugo, I think? Someone obscure was making $20 million a year.
It would sound like Seth Lugo. Yeah, that does sound like
it,
something.
It was. I can pull it up for you really
no
quick.
No worries. I was trying to figure what players they were.
But then even the Cardinals, because I looked at this as well, Cardinals had four different players that are making the same money that J-Ram's making this year.
I would also say, though, the Cardinals have no NFL team or NBA team to go against. They're kind of in the situation the Indians were in the mid-90s when football left town. Specific to that, the Kansas City one's a good point, though. What do you have there, Mac?
The third highest paid player on the Kansas City Royals is Michael Wacha, making $17.5 million.
That's what
million.
It was, Wacha. And then Luca's making an average per year of $23 million. So there's actually four players. Because Seth Lugo is $23 million a year. Salvador's $20 million a year. Bobby Witt Jr. is $26 million a year. Michael Wacha is $17 million a year.
So here's the thing I'll say. I hope that Hosey doesn't get to a point. Because here's the thing. Hosey in the clip, and again, this is where 7 months ago mattered. In the clip, he's like, well, when we renegotiate here at the end of this contract, which is what, 3 more years from this, that it's going to be a different story. He'll be 36.
Yeah, he's not going to have the same leveraging power himself. He just
now,
won't.
If he gets to a point where he says, you know what, I feel like this isn't working out. I love Cleveland, but I don't want to be here anymore. If you're not going to spend money, I can absolutely see that getting there. Again, if we're going into an offseason where I think a lot of people have said the reporting was they're not going to add a lot to the books anyways.
I wonder if he feels swindled. I think there is a part of him that can feel justified, and there's also a part of him that I should feel like kind of you could have saw this coming, right? Like when they went in 2016 and made that run, in 2017, the Guardians spent a boatload of money. Mm-hmm. Spent $150 million. Like they spent, and not like drunken sailors, but that's a considerable amount of money that they spent in 2017 and 2018. And I wonder if J-Ram just thought to himself, they have it. This is what they're going to be doing. This is how they're going to approach it. And they just obviously haven't continued on that spending rate. And so, like, part of me looks at this and says, J-Ram, you can't be surprised. But I wonder if he just hung on to what they did for 2017 and 2018 just a little too tight.
I think my bigger beef with how the Guardians have done this is they've expected the bats to save them. They did spend, and they spent some money this offseason, and they spent it predominantly in the bullpen in the rotation, plus Carlos Santana. But my problem is they haven't really... Okay, we're spend on the pitching staff, that's fine. Why don't you get creative and bring in a bat via trade where it's either a pre-arbitration bat or maybe it's a guy in a one-year rental where mm-hmm. it's not going to cost as much in terms of prospects? I think that's my frustration is the Guardians right now, or at least last offseason, have said, okay, we're not going to spend any money. We're not going to go above our budget from last year. As a matter of fact, we're going to cut the Jimenez contract out of this. And oh, by the way, we're also not going to make a trade for any more help in the offense.
Yeah.
So the only way your offense is going to get better is if everyone hits. And that's not how when you have eight prospects up at one time, you'll be lucky if two of them hit and maybe two more become utility players.
Well, so that's the sad part about this. And this is where if you just did a little bit of thinking ahead, J-Ram might have been able to see this coming. And I'm not blaming J-Ram, but this is the reality. The way the Guardians are set up right now and the influx of young talents, the timelines just don't match up to what is turning out to be the final twilight years of J-Ram's prime, essentially. Like there's a lot of really good team or a lot of really good players that you can sell in this farm system, and guys we've even seen this last year that it got brought up for even just a cup of coffee that you'd be like, all right, they're going to be cornerstones. They're going to be this, they're going to be that. But by the time they get to actually develop, J-Ram will be 36. He will be too old.
So there's two thoughts on this that I have. One, the Guardians might be one of four baseball teams across Major League Baseball that if it came to shove, that I would trust them to trade Hosey and make it work in a bountiful way. So that is something that I think, maybe I don't want to say eases my paranoia, mm-hmm. but eases my concern. Second thing, I will tell you this. Wouldn't be the worst thing for the Guardians to really check in with Hosey where he's at and just see what he needs and what his expectations are. Because if you look at there, it's so funny when people say name change, or Dolan's just cheap, this, that, and the other. The Guardians' last 2 years have been as good as their attendance has been since 16 and 17.
Yeah.
They're averaging, I want to say it's 25,500 fans per night,
mm-hmm.
Fans or 26.
Yeah.
So I think that's because Hosey's here. I think the economic impact of Hosey Ramirez signing that contract extension, I think the number one reason why attendance fluctuates the way it does is not just because when you're a small market team, you've got a 3-year window and you got to reset really quickly, as opposed to the Dodgers, who can have a 14-year window.
Well, you have a superstar to watch every single time.
Well, yes, familiarity.
That matters to people.
I think Hosey, even post his prime, And we're not too far off that, given just the general age standards for third baseman and how production declines.
Yeah.
I think a aging Jose Ramirez at third base is still going to bring people out to the ballpark.
Yeah, I do wonder. It's interesting because I was thinking in this whole discussion, I've been thinking about Mike Trout and the Angels. And because I've been thinking about how they've wasted many parts of his prime career. And now he's just in a spot where he just gets injured and isn't very good anymore. And I'm like, how many Angels fans came out from Mike Trout this many years into it? And it's odd because I would make an argument that Guardians fans care more about J-Ram and he has more box office appeal than Mike Trout ever had to Angels fans.
Well, okay, so this is an important...
We're a better fan base, obviously, but still.
This is an important caveat. You still have to win.
Yeah.
Like, right now you're winning because of Hosey. Going forward, you might have to win in part because of Hosey, but in part because of other guys you develop around him. But as long as you're winning and Hosey's here... I think that's the exact right combo of getting people in that ballpark more than you did 5-6 years ago.
I bet Jose's been surprised. He's like, wait, I said that back in March. There was supposed to be some conversation back in March. How did this now get going for people?
Because it takes that long for AI to translate. Matt, in a car, real quick, buddy, what you got for us?
Hey, guys, real quick, with the Angels situation, first off, they're competing against the Dodgers and the Lakers, sucking up all the oxygen there, and Artie Moreno is also, basically the James Dolan of the West, so that he's just incompetent, doesn't know how to run an organization. But unfortunately, again, this is why all of us Guardians fans have been screaming, from the hilltops, and I feel like we look like lunatics when we're, raging about you-know-who that runs, that owns the team. Because I feel like that's a faux pas to actually criticize them. It's just like they seemingly have endless money for politics every year, but when it comes to putting a team around a guy like J-Ram, that's just asking too much of fans. It's like attendance is up. People probably bought the Guards TV stuff. You have playoff revenue. There is zero excuse, and I expect everyone to be hammering them if they do not do anything this offseason.
Matt, we appreciate you. I think it's interesting. I think certain Guardians fans have taken the, I guess we can't talk about Dolan's thing, which, I made an impassioned plea after the Guardians got bounced out of the playoffs that just wasn't the right time to have the conversation, because I was ready to talk about the team and what they accomplished. I don't think there's anyone who doesn't think the Dolan should spend more.
Right.
I don't think there's anyone that's like, you know what, it's good for me. I think the point is, so much of the conversation becomes about the Dolans for certain people that they negate talking about the front office and the job they've done. They negate talking about the pitching factory. All of it is the conversation, not just the Dolans. Here's the other tricky thing. It feels like we have 1 to 3 years left with the Dolans. So there is a part where it's like, all right, maybe they're just riding this out until the contract with Blitzer kicks in. And again, I don't expect that guy to come in and spend copious amounts of money, but I think people are just ready for that change. Well, I'm like, well, I can't call for them to sell the team because it seems like they already did. We're just waiting for it to change hands.
Yeah, you're right. They're already committed to that, so it's okay. It's just I think the frustration started. Indians won the AL Central in 2018, and Dolan's cut the payroll by 14%. They won 93 games in 2019. He cut it by 17%. They won at a 93-win pace, made the playoffs in 2020, and they cut it by 42%. That does sting for people. It's okay to acknowledge that stings, but I also at this point, I don't have any answers for anyone. Like, they're committed to selling the team. They're not going to be the owner forever. We just have to ride it out for a little bit longer.
So I think it's okay to acknowledge it. I don't think it should ever not be acknowledged. I think if that's the only analysis, and you don't do this, mm-hmm. even though you're more critical of the Dolans than I am outwardly. I think it's when that's the only conversation certain people can have. To me, it becomes like the name change. It becomes the, okay, what else do you think? Because if that's the only thing you think about the team, I can't live. I can't control who owns the team. Same thing with Haslam. I could come out here every day and tell you why Jimmy Haslam is the worst owner in the NFL. I don't need to. He's doing it for me. All right? Now, will it be referenced? Yes. It's not the only conversation we have about the Cleveland Browns.
Right. It's part of the story. It's not the entire story. And there's obviously a lot of context that is needed with this.
Any concern that Hosey still feels frustrated with the Guardians after this season, in case you missed it, in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey friends, it's Ken Carmen and Anthony Lima. Did you know that the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima is both a radio show and a podcast? You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods. Catch the full episode, listen by the hour, or jump straight to the highlights. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search our names, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show. Your way and on your time.